Today, generations don't interact the way they used to. Outside of the house, most of us spend most of our time interacting with people from our own generation. And we may be losing something important in the process. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, talking to, listening, and learning from our elders. Carl Pillemer is the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University. He's the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. I'll talk with him and two young women who've set out to connect with their elders. We also want to hear from you. What's the most important thing you learned from your elders? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most of us hope to become wiser as we grow older. And as it turns out, we do tend to gain wisdom with experience. If we're lucky, we can benefit from the wisdom of those who have gone before us. But that takes a willingness to reach out, listen, and learn from our elders. This hour, I'll talk with people who have reached out, and we want to hear from you. What's the most valuable thing that you've learned from your grandparents or other elders in your life? You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Carl Pillemer. He's a professor of human development and gerontology. He's also the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University. He's the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans, and a follow-up, 30 Lessons for Loving. And he's on the phone right now. Hello, Carl.
Well, and thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And as a gerontologist, you were spending a lot of time working with older people, and you kind of had an epiphany about the people that you were working with, about their happiness. Tell me what you learned.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it's sort of a confession I have to make that I'd been a gerontologist for around 25 years, and it suddenly hit me almost as a revelation that everything I was studying was really older people as problems and the problems of old people. So I was co-directing a center for the study of chronic pain. I studied elder abuse and Alzheimer's disease. I actually began to feel like I was rewriting the book of Job for old people, basically. And I realized that our society does the same thing. It treats older people as isolated, frail, lonely, sick. And that began to seem to me, again, sort of out of the blue, as way too narrow. And that there was actually a different way to approach older people that would focus on what they have to offer. And one of the main things that they have to offer is practical advice for about how we can live our lives.
You also just observed that the older people that you were interacting with, you felt were happier than younger people.
You know, it was my own observation, because I was seeing, as I was studying all these awful things that can happen to old people, I was also encountering vibrant, healthy, happy 80, 90-year-olds and beyond. But I'll add that there was a series of fascinating studies that began around 10 years ago, showing very robustly that older people are happier than younger people, that really happiness really begins to build in the 60s and beyond. And many older people, despite having a burden of chronic illness and despite having experienced loss, are actually happier than 40 or 50-year-olds. So I began to ask myself, what's that all about? And could we find out what it is that older people know about living a happier and more fulfilling life and distill it and make it available to young people? And I wasn't disappointed. It was it's the most fun I've ever had professionally over the last 10 years.
So you started talking to people with the idea that you would glean their wisdom?
So I was fascinated because there have been studies in psychology of elder wisdom, but it's more like that kind of Yoda-like wisdom, or the character that Morgan Freeman plays in almost every movie these days, you know. It was that kind of sort of nebulous wisdom. And what had never been done was a large-scale study of the practical advice of older people. So what would older people say if asked, as you look back over the course of your life, what are the most important lessons you've learned? What would you advise young parents about child rearing, young married couples about marriage, people looking for a purpose in life, about how to find a career? No one was asking them those kinds of questions. And I did realize that it's only been in about the last 100 years or so that people have gone to anyone other than the oldest person they knew for that kind of advice. So it seemed to me that there was a huge gap there, and we could use standard kinds of social science methods to get a sense of what older people would advise younger people.
Well, you have collected this advice and shared it in book form, but you also on your website share a lot of video clips of interviews that you've done with people over these years. And I want to share a clip from a woman named Gert. She is 101 years old, and here she is sharing her recipe for success.
Get a good education first. Everybody should be educated, because they'll all learn something from life. I think everybody should have a hobby. Be happy in your job. I think having to work for someone that you detest is a horrible thing. Work with nice people. Be charitable. Give what you can. Well, I think I did everything right. Maybe that's why. And it turned out right.
That is Gert sharing her recipe for success.
She was absolutely a remarkable person. And, you know, I'm really glad you played that clip, because really that's what all of us would like to do, is we'd like to come to the end of 100 years or so and say, well, I think I did everything at least almost right, and it turned out right. And the question is, how do we get there? And that was really what these books tried to answer.
Now, for some of us, it can be difficult to listen to our elders if they feel like they've done everything right. That can feel like a criticism of what we're doing. So do you have some advice for people on how to talk to the elders in their lives to be able to listen and learn without some of the conflicts and baggage that some of us bring to these relationships?
You know, I actually think that this is a great tool for those kinds of conversations, and I'm glad you asked that question. So what we found in later programs where we help people to have these kinds of conversations is that if you ask an older parent, let's say, or grandparent, about their life story, for example, you often get something kind of predictable. But we found it's particularly powerful to ask about advice, and because it really gives the older person this sense of being a sage and offering something to younger people. So instead of just asking your grandfather, let's say, what was it like in the Depression or what did you do in World War II, ask after that, so what did you learn from that experience? It's very empowering. And I think you're right. Rather than being know-it-alls, a lot of older people are, first of all, quite surprised to be asked this question in our society. And second of all, it opens up this kind of really fascinating route for conversation. In the books, we actually give some suggestions for questions, but really just starting out with what was our core question. As you look back over 70, 80, 90, 100 years, what are some of the most important lessons you've learned that you'd like to pass on to young people like me? Can create a fascinating and non-threatening way for people to talk about their lives.
As you were gathering this information, did it change how you approach your life? Did it change you?
It really did, in small and large ways. I tested out, as I was writing the second book, which is older people's and long married people's advice about love and marriage. I've been married for 38 years, and my wife had, you know, of course, had to live through me testing out these various techniques that they recommend in our relationship. And I found that they worked extraordinarily well. I think, you know, that there are two ways in which I would say my worldview was especially changed. First is that if you ask older people especially in their 90s and beyond, for advice about getting old, their view of the later years is so much more positive than ours is as younger people. So it's immensely reassuring. Many of them have found very old age to be an adventure, a time of greater freedom and greater clarity, even though they have health problems and have lost a lot of loved ones. So I think that really changed my view as someone who recently turned 60-ish, you know, really thinking about it. Also, the other thing that changed my life, and I think really has changed other people reading it, is they really focus on the shortness of life. So the older you are, the more likely you are to say, life passes by in an instant, or I can't believe how quickly it passed. Actually, one of my favorite quotes from the whole project was a 99-year-old who said to me, I don't know what happened, because the next thing you know, you're 100. And that's really their feeling. I personally, and I think a lot of readers of the books, have begun to think about time more carefully, how we use time, valuing experiences and people over spending a lot of time making money to buy things. So I would say that's really how it's affected my own life. I've become much more aware of having time be used for meaningful and fulfilling things. I'll stop there, but there definitely are some other things I felt I learned personally.
Well, one of the things that we've learned about longevity is that people with positive outlooks tend to live longer. And as you were doing these interviews, I mean, I'm sure some people have pretty positive outlooks, enjoy their old age, can reflect on their lives, but I'm sure there were other people who were really unhappy. Did you also talk to people who maybe were not as happy looking back?
I'm so glad you raised that point, because it's a clarification I always need to give. We specifically did not focus on happy, healthy, and, you know, wonderful agers. Our studies were actually done in part through a national random sample survey, so you could be picked at random. And in the samples that we got, there were people who'd wound up old, alone, and depressed. Or in our studies of marriage, people who'd been divorced 3 times and wound up alone and sad. However, they really worked for this project because their advice is invaluable. I personally feel like I've learned more from things I didn't do well than things I did. So it was very, very important to include people who had a lot of regrets and could tell young people how to avoid them. But you also do raise a good point. It's quite likely that there is a bias in my studies because people with these happier, less depressed, and more positive outlooks may live longer. So there is a little bit of a positivity bias. But we really tried to bring in people whose main advice wasn't, I was so great. It was, really, life didn't turn out so well for me, and here's how you can avoid what happened to me.
I'm talking with Carl Pillemer. He is the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University and the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans, also a follow-up, 30 Lessons for Loving. And in a moment, I'll also talk with a couple of young women who have reached out to the elders in their communities. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about listening and learning from our elders, wisdom from later in life. We'd love to hear from you this hour. What is the most important thing or the most valuable thing you feel you've learned from the elders in your life, maybe your grandparents or your parents? You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Carl Pillemer. He is the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University and the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans, also a follow-up on love and romance, 30 Lessons for Loving. And I want to bring in someone who is living a unique experience right now. Haley Jenkins is a music major at Drake University. In January, she became an artist in residence at Deerfield Retirement Community in Urbandale. She's been performing for the residents in exchange for room and board, which also means living with and developing relationships with the residents. And she has decided to extend her stay through December. Haley, hello.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. And I want to focus not so much on the music and the art part of what you've been doing at the retirement community, but as a resident of the retirement community and the only young resident of the retirement community, how do you interact with your roommates, with your floor mates?
Well, yes, I am the youngest. Very recently I was a senior, and so we had this ongoing joke that I'm the youngest senior at Deerfield Retirement Community. And, it starts with just a hello and an introduction, and the not only staff but the residents have been really welcoming and set up opportunities for me not only to meet large groups of people, after my concerts and such, but everyone's really active in Deerfield, and so every time I meet someone in the hallway, I always say hello and maybe even catch a quick conversation or see if it is around dinner time. I either invite myself or invite them along to dinner with me. So it really starts with a casual hello, and if they don't know my name or if I don't know theirs, just an introduction, and from there it sparks a conversation.
Now, the way this was set up, we knew that you would be bringing a lot to the community with your performances and with your music, and we know that music is something that really moves people and can create some incredible connections. But when you started, what did you expect to get out of the experience?
Well, what I expected was great relationships. You know, what other 22-year-old can say that most of her day-to-day conversations and relationships that she's building is over the age of, 75? And so what I wanted to get was a newfound establishment of not only relationships, but just networking and just friends that I can build on. And with that, I think with all relationship comes learning. And so I really wanted to not only learn about a new and different, not only age range, but people that can give me not only stories, but really advice on my life and learning that I couldn't get from the other college students at Drake University.
Has this made you feel socially isolated from the other college students in any way?
That was a worry of mine in the beginning, but I will have to say that no. I spend a lot of my evenings, of course, at Deerfield Retirement Community, but my day-to-day is all at Drake University. So the balance of daytime activities and nighttime activities, I just tried to do to be at Drake when I was at Drake and be at Deerfield when I was at Deerfield and try to stay as present as possible. And that really, some friends came back to Deerfield and have had dinners with me, and we've connected with them, not only with the Deerfield residents, but with Drake University. So that's been an inner conversation with both of those two groups. So, no, I really haven't felt that isolation, but it can be a problem, and I think that was a worry not only for me, but for Deerfield, and I really blazed through that and hopefully keep doing that, keeping that balance.
So tell me about something that you have learned in seeking advice from your roommates. What have you discovered about yourself, and has it changed your path to the future?
As I reflect on that, I think that dinner conversation, that's probably the main time that I am with the residents, dinner conversation and stoking those questions and answers has really changed my perception on not only older people, but as far as my career path and my path into my adulthood. I mean, I will graduate in December, and so I am asking everyone I know, how did you branch into your adult life, or how did you decide on your career path? So I had this amazing conversation with about six other residents, and we went around the table and we said not only where we were from, but they said what they did in life as far as their careers, and they did a little bit of advice without me asking. They gave a little bit of advice on not only how they got the job, but how they succeeded in their job. So that was really special for me, and I just learned so much from that conversation, and those are conversations that I have all the time, and I really try to evoke in every conversation that I have with residents at Deerfield.
Can you pass along one piece of wisdom that you've gained from that advice you've gotten?
Yeah, I think that so many people, I'm 22, and so a lot of them say, you know, you have time, Haley, you have time, don't rush anything. And with that, don't settle. Don't settle for something that doesn't challenge you and doesn't evoke passion within you. And so they say work hard and don't settle for something that your talents aren't giving back.
And I want to bring Carl Pillemer of the Legacy Project back into the conversation here, and you stay with us, Haley. But I mean, Carl, it's interesting to listen to Haley talk about these relationships she's forming and this advice that she's gotten. And you were talking earlier about how short life feels. But in reading about some of these older people and getting to know older people, sometimes I'm really struck by how much they were able to do in their lives. Sometimes it makes me think, maybe I'm in too much of a hurry. There is time to do some other things. I can focus on what's important right now.
Oh, you know, that is so true. And let me say for Haley, this program just sounds extraordinary. What an incredible idea. It also makes you realize in everyday life how age-segregated our lives have become. You know, that young people don't routinely interact with people in their 70s and beyond, and that we have to create these special kinds of programs to make it happen. So I think it is absolutely wonderful that that's going on, and it can really help us to try to overcome ageism and that sort of thing. You've also raised another point, and I think it did come out in what Haley was saying. We have an image as younger people of life being way shorter than it is. So if you talk to an average college student, and of course I deal with them all the time in my job, people kind of think they have ideas about life until about age 60, and then it's like a blank slate. Now, however, we have an incredible longevity bonus. Many people are going to be retired and in later life for as long as they were in the workforce and probably be in reasonably good health. So people do, just like you said, need to rearrange their thinking towards needing your body and your other resources for 90 or 100 years. And that's the good news. There's an amazing longevity bonus that no previous generations have ever had, offering a lot of us 2, 3, or 4 decades after age 60. And we have to reorient our thinking about aging along those lines. You're right. I think we have a lot more time than we think we do.
If we're lucky, we sure do. Haley, what made you decide to stay at the retirement community through December, because you were supposed to be moving out about now, right?
Yes, that's correct. I think that the relationships that I've created really, you asked earlier, you know, what changed or your perception on life, what changed? And I think that what changed for me is I was so focused on music and giving back with my talent of music, but it's so much more than that. It's so much more than just performing for them. It's about exchanging of ideas and being around to just talk to them about, what song reminded or sparked a memory for them. And throughout this time, it's been a short couple of months, but my changing as far as career path might go is gerontology.
It
sparked some sort of fire. It was there, but it was never really ignited. And I think Deerfield really ignited not only my love of older people, but everyone around me at Drake is not only either dealing with younger generations, a lot of music education majors around me, but no one's focusing on that generation. And I just felt a huge, huge space and huge emptiness that needed to be filled in our attention to our older generation.
And might I ask Haley a quick question?
Sure.
Haley, but what have your peers said as you've described this? If people thought this was, odd to be doing, or did they think it was cool, or what has the reaction of your fellow students been as you describe what you're doing this semester and where you're living?
I've gotten a whole range of a range of emotions and reactions. A lot of people do, once I explain it to them and really not only invite them in, but really invite them into a conversation that goes in depth about what I'm doing, they do think it's fascinating, and they do think that, wow, you know, there isn't a lot of programs that do intergenerational programming and activity, but a lot of them do think it's quite odd, or rather odd. They don't usually think about older generations or spending time with them. They're usually so focused on the younger generation or the millennial generation, which is who and what I am. I think that so many people are confused about what I'm doing, and some people don't think that there is an importance. But when I go into detail and when I go in depth about what I'm doing and how it's changed my life, I think they're more excited and more they're less confused about what it is and they're excited about it.
Well, Haley, thank you so much for talking with us today and for sharing your story. Do you think, is Deerfield thinking about what comes next with the success of this program after you do move out in December?
I think that they're really excited about continuing something like this, and if that is another artist in residence from Drake University or another college around for another student to move in after me, I think that's something that is in their on their minds. But I think only time will tell, and I can only hope that another student comes in and is as passionate and as willing to not only talk to the residents but make that extra effort. And I can only hope that I'm a part of that, and hopefully extending this with other college students and bringing a new young face into the Deerfield retirement community.
Well, Haley, thanks a lot for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Haley Jenkins is a music major at Drake University. In January, she became an artist in residence at Deerfield Retirement Community in Urbandale and has extended her stay now through December. This hour, we're talking about learning from our elders, and we have a lot of people who want to get in on this conversation, so I want to get to the phones here. Rawls is on the line in Forest City. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. What would you like to share?
I have a short story. About 30 years ago, the Register did an article on a barber, I believe he was in Story City, who had been barbering since he was like 18, and he was like 95 now. A huge three-page story saying that he'd seen everything from the horse and buggy to the jets to man in the moon. But at the end of the article, the reporter said, "You've seen everything, of course, and in a small town, the barbershop is the hub of activity." He said, "What's the most important thing you ever learned?" He said, quote, "Knowing when to shut up."
That is valuable.
And I have used that well. I traveled the country doing lots of work and dealt with a lot of organizations. And when I was younger on committees, I was the first one to say, "Madam Chairperson, let me tell you what I think." And now I just got to shut up and listen. And it served me well.
Rawls, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And Carl, I'll bet he's not the first person to share that advice. Have you been surprised by some of the simplicity and value of some of the advice you've gotten?
I'm surprised, but this is not to be stereotypical. I'm surprised to hear that coming from a barber because, you know, often they do chat with you. Yes, that actually is a very, very interesting lesson, and it's one that we heard from lots of people. Many people said as they entered their 60s and 70s and beyond, they did learn how to listen. They became less concerned about what they had to say and getting their own opinions across and more interested in learning what other people had to say. So I think that is something that quite a few people actually do embrace as they get older, is becoming a little quieter and more receptive, even, you know, against our stereotypes, even a little more tolerant and interested in other people's views. So, yeah, that is a good one.
Peter is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Charity. I just wanted to relate a couple things. Some advice my grandfather gave me when I was in a change of career. I studied restaurant management at Tech High School and discovered running a restaurant was something I really didn't like. So I went to him and I said, you know, what should I do? And he said, find out what you love doing and just do it. Any type of work that you do, you got to love it. Otherwise, it's not worth doing. And I, my other passion was photography, and so I changed my career path into photography. And one of the things I discovered about photography is that you have to sell yourself. And so from that, I became a really good salesperson. And in sales, there's an old saying, listen 20% of the time, or listen 80% of the time, talk 20% of the time.
Nice.
So well, you become a very good listener.
Yeah, Peter, thank you so much for sharing your story. And we're going to have to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk more about learning from our elders, listening to our elders. Carl Pillemer is here with me now. He's the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University and the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. Coming up in a moment, we'll talk with Iowa Public Radio talk show producer Emily Woodbury, who reached out to her grandparents in a unique way. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about learning from the wisdom of our elders, reaching out, listening, and learning from those who have gone before us. With me is Carl Pillemer. He's the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University and the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. He also did a follow-up, 30 Lessons for Loving. We'd also love to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And on the subject of lessons for loving, Emily Woodbury, one of our producers here at Iowa Public Radio, is getting married in September. And last Thanksgiving, she decided to sit down and interview her grandparents about their marriage. They've been married for 56 years. Hello, Emily.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And I mean, Emily, when you sat down with your grandparents, obviously you were trying to record a special part of your family history and get that recorded so that you have that forever. But in addition to that, what were you hoping to learn from them?
You know, I mean, they met in 1956, and 60 years later, they're still together. And, you know, they seem relatively happy. They have moments where, you know, they kind of groan and just ignore each other. But, you know, they're really happy together. And so I want, you know, I kind of admire that in a way. I hope that, you know, 60 years from now, with a bit of luck, that, you know, me and my fiance are kind of where they're at now. So I wanted to see if, you know, they had any advice for us.
When you told them that you wanted to interview them and ask their advice, what was their response?
Well, Gampy was very into it because he's always been talking to me about, you know, family history. And so it was actually interesting when I sat down with them that my grandmother, she's usually so closed off. She never talks about stuff. She actually talked the most. You know, she kind of dominated the conversation, which was really fun. And I don't know what about, you know, sitting down together and doing that brought that out. But, you know, if you have someone in your life that, you know, is kind of closed off, I'd suggest try just sitting down with them for a few hours and just asking them questions, because it was really cool to hear her open up and talk about her life and, you know, her love of her life and her children. So that was really unique.
Very cool. All right. So let's listen to your grandparents. You asked them for advice specifically about marriage.
I'd say humor. I'm still big on humor and respect. Humor, yeah. And respect.
The sayings that you have when you get to be as old as we are is so far so good. Every day is a gift. You know, the moment is now, because when you're 30 years old, you're thinking about a whole different, you're thinking about your whole life ahead of you. When you get in the mid-70s, it's all behind you now. We're not planning on doing anything, well, you get new appliances maybe, but there's no big wish list.
You know what? I think, and of course, I probably should use that even today, to really enjoy, I guess take the time to stop and think. Like you ask us about, well, did you discuss things? Did you talk about, you know, I mean, your life? And no, you don't. But I think sometimes I almost wish I did. You know, that's really, let's really enjoy this moment. It's sort of like your own children. I don't, it's a blur. Then your grandchildren, everybody loves their grandchildren because you get, you don't have to have the responsibility, but you do get to have all the fun. And you think, I wish I did more of that with my own kids. But you don't seem to.
You're too busy raising them.
And why is that? Why don't we do that? I would recommend that you really, even if you don't have children, your life, just stop and enjoy it at the time.
And, you know, hearing that, you know, that's something you hear a lot. And, you know, Carl mentioned that earlier in the show that, you know, when you talk to people, they say enjoy the moment at the time. But it's just always good to be reminded of that because in your, you know, late 20s and early 30s, so much is happening. You're trying so hard to build your life. You're not actually experiencing your life as it's happening. So.
Right. Well, and it's funny to listen to your grandfather pull out those cliches, but the fact that, yeah, you hear them, but then you learn that they're actually true.
Yeah.
Well, you also asked them about problems. You looked for some advice about the pitfalls that they experienced in their relationship and their marriage. And let's listen to that.
I think about that. And I see some pictures of me getting out of the car with my dad, because, you know, we weren't real close or anything, you know, but helping me out of the car. And I thought, oh, well, that was different. And
he's never done that before.
Yeah, you know, and the picture of, like, your parents kissing you on the cheek. We have that one that's staged, you know, and in your wedding dress and everything. But I don't remember anything about it. I don't remember walking down the aisle. I don't remember saying vows. It's almost terrible when I think about it, because I thought, my gosh, then what do I remember about it? No,
what I remember most is you going over to the Blessed Virgin statue, and I at that time I had no interest in the Blessed Virgin or any of that stuff. I'm saying, I wonder what she's really doing there. Is she saying, I hope this works out? Or
okay, so that wasn't the one that we were intending to play, but basically what you'd learned in that question was that your grandma didn't actually remember the wedding?
She didn't remember anything about it. And, you know, everyone's been telling me as I get ready to get married, they're like, you know, really pay attention that day because it'll go by. But, you know, hearing my grandma say she actually literally doesn't remember anything, I was like, oh, God, I'm really going to stop and take the time that day. Wow. I hope that I remember
did
more.
Did that make you wonder, maybe this isn't that important? Maybe this isn't maybe I'm putting a little too much energy into this.
Oh yeah, that could be true.
So, and we're not going to play the one that we were talking about there, but the possible pitfalls of their relationship. Did you learn something from asking them about that? Were they able to be really honest with you?
Yes, they were. And the story was that basically my grandfather, you know, secretly went out and took flying lessons, and when he was supposed to be kind of making extra money for the family, and she found out about it. She actually thought he was having an affair. And you know, it was a big deal. And even at the end of the clip, you can hear she's kind of still a little bothered by it. And it made me think, well, you know what? I really need to sit down with Brad, my fiance, and talk about, you know, is there anything you're not doing that you want to do in life? Or, you know, talk about finances. What kinds of things do we want to spend money on? So hearing that story was kind of nice to, you know, have that conversation now about, you know, what we want to do into the future, what goals do we have, so we can plan ahead and not be secretly taking flying lessons in 10 years.
Right. So communication, maybe being honest with each other, is a great idea. Carl, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Listening to Emily sit down and talk with her grandparents. Now, earlier, Emily, you were saying just focusing that kind of attention on your grandmother brought out a lot in her that you didn't necessarily know was there. I mean, Carl, that's definitely a lesson for all of us.
You know, I think Emily made the point so beautifully in this. And also, it's just a trip to talk to these people. I mean, it really is just fun to talk to someone who can reflect on 60 years of marriage. But you found, I think, exactly what we found. If you ask somebody, please tell me about your marriage, they kind of clam up. But for some reason, if a young person goes and says, what's your advice about it? they really will open up in unique ways. So I think, you know, that your clip was a great one, that it really shows how this is one way to start intergenerational dialogues.
Did you ask people about their regrets?
Yes, we did. So we asked them in both studies. First, in general, we first asked them, what do you regret? But we were more focused on what can a young person do to avoid regrets. And actually, you know, there was one thing that we learned there that was one of the big surprises of the study. When I asked people what they most regretted, I thought we'd get big ticket items like an affair or a shady business deal. One of the strongest things was people wished, very similar to what you said, that they hadn't spent so much time worrying, that they hadn't spent so much time not being aware of the pleasures of life, and that they spent time in sort of negative thoughts and ruminations. And very often they felt that they would like to have that time back, spent sort of worrying over nothing. As a world-class worrier, I found that incredibly useful. It's like having 1,200 grandparents yelling at you. when you get really old, you're going to say, I spent 3 months worrying about X and it ruined my life. I wish I had that time back. So I think that's their feeling about marriage, too, that you go through parts of it in a blur, especially age 30 to 50 when you have kids, you're working, you know, hard, and you wake up at 50 and you kind of don't know where you are because life has become such a blur. So I think what they recommended to you is this kind of awareness and gratitude for these wonderful things in life as you're going through them. It sounds like a cliche, but coming from this many older people, I think it's very useful advice.
It's been amplified by the number of people sharing that message with us. Emily, have you found that you've already... Carl was talking earlier about when he did all those interviews about love and marriage that he was trying things out. Have you found that you're already trying to implement advice that you got from your grandparents?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that they talk about, too, is that they really took time to, you know, even though they started having kids at 20 and they just jumped into this big family life, they always took time to have trips and be with each other. And that's something, you know, I'm planning, really, my fiance and I haven't gone on any trips. I want to start taking trips. I want to, like, get out more and enjoy our lives together. And, you know, really just try to remember. I've started journaling, actually, which I've never done before. And I'd started doing that after this interview, actually. And I think and I hope that it's helpful down the road and kind of nice to look back on.
I hope you didn't learn that work isn't the most important thing. We need you back here tomorrow as well. There are a lot of people who want to get in on this conversation. Let's go to Walt in Mason City. Hi, Walt.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your advice?
Well, I'm 67 years old. I'm a retired oncologist. And when I was doing my training, I was seeing a patient with a mentor. And this lady had a disease which was not at all life-threatening. She was going to live a normal lifespan, probably another 30 years. And she was very upset about something. And he said this, and I've used this line many times with my patients. He said, given your anticipated lifespan, something that is going to have no impact on your life 3 months from now is really not as important as you think it is right now. Kind of puts our long-term into perspective.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that being an oncologist also gave you some perspective on that as well.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, Walt, thank you so much for sharing that. And again, that just echoes what we were just talking about, Carl. We also have this tweet from Sandra. My grandmother taught me to always be kind and give freely, to be compassionate and generous. We also have some email feedback from a couple of people who've been listening to the show today. This one's from Sean in North Liberty. When I was younger, my grandma watched my two brothers and myself on the weekends. When my parents needed a break, my grandma would take us to visit her mother in a retirement home. It was a great place for us to learn not to fear old people, but to respect and love to talk to our elders. Meredith shared this about a partnership in Clarksville, Iowa. She says students in Vicki Miller's fourth grade classes at Clarksville Elementary School for several years have adopted nursing home buddies at the Clarksville Nursing Home. The students walk to the nursing home for monthly visits and do activities together. Both of our children have participated in the program, and a lot of good learning and understanding has happened all the way around. And Carl, I want to ask you quickly about that, because we do sometimes set up opportunities for kids to interact with older people, which is wonderful. And I know it brings a lot of life into these retirement communities or nursing homes. But and I participated in a lot of those when I was a kid. And there's kind of a difference between the ones that are a fun distraction, but the ones that really go deeper. And I made a lot of amazing friends who were from a very different generation from mine when I was able to get past the, oh, hi, this is I'm here for a couple of hours to brighten your day. How do you deepen those connections when people do interact?
You know, you are right that it's so important, and we are entering into an aging society. There have never been this many old people around, and preparing our kids to understand aging and to be prepared for dealing with aging and social issues of aging is really critical, so these programs are great. I think you've hit the nail right on the head. What doesn't work so well is bringing a group of fourth graders one time into a nursing home to sing Christmas carols. Often they leave with worse attitudes about aging because they don't understand it. Having a real program in which kids learn about aging, in which they interact with more active elders, and they're really given structured activities to do, really have a powerful impact on those attitudes. But you're right, it needs to be longer and allow for relationships to develop. And there are many good models. People can just go on the web. There are excellent models for these kinds of intergenerational programs. And the ones, you know, that are more intensive work very well.
I have heard a lot of advice for younger people about how to ask questions, how to approach the elders in their lives. Let's take just a very quick minute to look at it from the other way, because I know there are a lot of older people who would really love to share their wisdom with the younger people in their lives. But sometimes giving unsolicited advice can really backfire. So is there some advice that you have, Carl, for how older people can reach out to share that wisdom without making the younger people defensive?
You know, that is a very good question, because there are younger people who get defensive, and most of us get defensive if we're offered unsolicited advice. I think the best way to approach it is to introduce it as a topic. Would you be interested in this? I've written a couple of articles on how people should interview their future self. So if you're going to get married, interview someone who's been married 60 years. If you're thinking about your career, I think that older people can offer themselves in that way. Would you like to know about this? Invite younger people into a discussion. I think they'll be surprised at how many younger people are actually interested. Now, it might not work the best from our own parents, but from our grandparents or other older people in our network, I think it can be really effective.
We have another tweet. This is from Kate. She says, my 92-year-old Aunt Rosie gives me perspective on big things, parenting, career, marriage, and struggles of rights for women. And I think that's an important lesson here, too. It helps us put in perspective all of the advantages that we do have today, doesn't it, Carl?
It does. You know, I would look at older people's wisdom like this. It's an alternative to current conventional wisdom. So you can get current conventional wisdom by going on the web. What older people give you is something a little different, a different lens on life, and that's why it's so valuable.
Carl, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. Hope to join you again sometime.
Carl Pillemer is a professor of human development and gerontology. He's the founder of the Legacy Project at Cornell University and the author of 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. And Emily Woodbury, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Emily Woodbury is a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio, and she shared with us some of the lessons she's learned from her grandparents who've been married for 56 years. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.